Welcome, everyone, to the House Committee on Human Services and Housing. Today is April 18th, 2017. Full agenda, lots of bills to work. I'm going to open the work session on House Bill 2008. Cassie, please remind us about this bill.
House Bill 2008, we last heard on April 4th. We have the Dash 6 amendment, which replaces the measure and increases the termination fees for terminating rental agreements for single-wide, double-wide, and triple-wide or larger manufactured dwellings, and specifies information required for manufactured dwelling parks to register with the manufactured, the MCRC, and specifies requirements for transferring the title of a manufactured dwelling. And the bill declares an emergency effective on passage.
All right.
So have we removed the Dash 5s into this bill yet?
No, we haven't.
Okay. No. So, Madam Chair, I move that we adopt the Dash 5 amendments into House Bill 2008.
Okay. Vice Chair also moves to adopt the Dash 5 amendments dated April 12, 2017. Any discussion on the Dash 5? These are the three that the coalition agreed to, along with the sponsor of the bill.
Right.
Sponsors of the bill. Okay. Any objection to the amendments? Seeing none, they are adopted.
And, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2008 to the floor with a due pass recommendation with the adopted amendment.
Vice Chair Olson moves House Bill 2008 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank the partners, both the sponsor and Chuck Carpenter and Mr. Van Lattingham, for the good work they did to come to an agreement. And I encourage your, you know, continued work with the coalition to hopefully, you know, bring and resolve some of the issues that we're trying to struggle with and handle. So thank you so much for your work, and I just want to thank the, you know, let the chair know.
Thank you.
I absolutely agree with that.
I think there's a ditto all the way around. Thank you very much. Okay, please call the roll.
Representative Corsi?
Yes.
Representative Meek?
Aye.
Representative Neerman?
No.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative Peluso?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
No.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair
Kangai? Aye. Okay, the motion passes, and we'll have Representative Fahey be the carrier for that. And I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2008. Open work session on House Bill 2433. Cassie, please remind us of that bill.
House Bill 2433. Is about low-income senior housing on school district lands. We last heard this bill on March 21st. The Dash 1 amendment directs OHCS and the school district to develop and implement the housing co-location pilot program for low-income senior housing to increase affordable housing. And this Dash 1 amendment removed certain requirements for OHCS to comply with Federal Fair Housing Act.
So, Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated April 10th, 2017, into House Bill 2433.
Vice Chair also moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated April 10th, 2017. Is there any discussion? I want to remind the committee what the amendment does is to remove the requirement that the people living in the housing serve as volunteers, because that violates the Fair Housing Act in some way in terms of servitude. There are many ways that you can still encourage volunteerism, and it's done in other programs, but we had to tweak the language to be in compliance with federal law. There was, Representative Neerman, we had talked about doing a further teeny tweak on it that legislative council could just not get to, and so that can happen at the next stage. I don't even remember what it was, but it was very, very small. And we thought, well, let's try to get it right, but they're swamped, and it was so minor that we didn't worry about it. So it would it has that opportunity in Ways and Means. The fiscal is not very clear, because it's not clear whether there's going to be two homes or four homes or six homes. And so that could depend on what kind of funding is available, what amount could be, you know, where the cap might be on this. Okay. Any other questions on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? Seeing none, amendment is adopted.
Okay. And Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2433 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Olson moves House Bill 2433 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion on the bill? Seeing none, Ashley, please call the roll.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative Mead?
Aye.
Representative Nierman?
Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative Lusa?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair Kingar?
Aye. The motion passes, and it's on to Ways and Means. Close the work session on House Bill 2433. I want to make a comment out there to about manufactured homes that 3331, we're waiting on paperwork, so that's going to go at the end. In case you're wondering why we didn't hear both bills together. So, okay, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3253. Cassie, please read the summary.
House Bill 3253 clarifies that state agencies and departments shall purchase certain products and services from the Commission for the Blind and establishes the business enterprise program within the Commission to maintain and manage authorized vending facilities. We last heard this on April 6th. We have the fiscal, and it requires further analysis, and the revenue has no impact.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3253 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the House Committee on Rules.
Vice Chair also moves House Bill 3253 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the House Committee on Rules. Any discussion? Okay, so I would like to explain this. We've had one hearing, and we had a couple of, we've had several talks about this bill, and we had two possible amendments that were posted to OLIS about 6 months before the April 6th hearing. There was really no opportunity to discuss those amendments, so we're not suggesting that those amendments, and there was considerable objection to the amendments, so we're not suggesting that those amendments be adopted. We're taking the base bill and referring it to rules because we just need more time to work this, and I was notified that if we want a chance of this bill going through, we really need to try to get it out of House rules in about 10 days. So we need to do some concerted effort to come to some agreements on this, and Representative Jody Hack, who's on the Rules Committee, has agreed to work with me on it. So I'm really looking forward to working with her on that, and hope that we can really make progress so that this bill can go forward. So that is my point of discussion. Any other questions or discussion on this bill? All right. Then, Ashley, please call the roll.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative Meek?
Aye.
Representative Nierman?
Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative
Tulsa?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair Kingar?
Aye. Okay. The motion passes. It's on its way to rules. Close the work session on House Bill 3253. Open a work session on House Bill 2684. Cassie?
House Bill 2684 establishes a minimum hourly wage of $15 per hour for employees who provide direct care to residents of residential training facilities or residential training home. The bill establishes a civil penalty for each occurrence of substantiated abuse and directs DHS to conduct annual inspections of every residential training facility and residential training home. The bill declares an emergency effective on passage. We last heard this on March 7th. Both the fiscal and the revenue require further analysis, and there is a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay. Okay, so Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2684 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair also moves House Bill 2684 to the floor with a due pass recommendation that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion? Representative Peluso, would you like to say anything about the work group that you've been leading?
Other than it's doing what it's supposed to be doing.
Yeah, okay. So there's a work group Representative Peluso has been leading, along with Representative Hack, who had a similar bill, some ideas about increasing the wages and reimbursement rates for the agencies that provide this work. And they've been meeting with a couple of people from SEIU, a couple of people who represent the agencies that do the contract work, and a couple of people from DHS. And it's a big bill. There's still more work to do, and so it will go on to Ways and Means, where Senator Gelser, who's very familiar with the IDD community and has worked a lot on child welfare in terms of both increasing reimbursements and accountability, will join their efforts.
And with that, Madam Chair, again, we've been meeting on Mondays. We met yesterday, and hoping one or two more meetings are needed at the most. So okay, we're making some good progress.
Great. Okay, thank you.
So Madam Chair, I guess I'll just speak up a little bit. I really do appreciate the efforts here. I appreciate the intent of what Representative Rayfield has wanted to do with this bill. Having gone out and visited homes and different centers involving the IDD population, I get it. I mean, that's a lot of hard work. We all understand that. I'm struggling with wanting to move this type of a concept in, you know, separating it, carving it out separately from other individuals and other different groups. I'm glad that we're still going to be moving forward with a work group on this whole thing. Right now, I just want to send a message no for myself on this. I could very easily be a yes on the floor with it.
After more work is
done
on
it. Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Did you? It's like he stole my speech. Madam Chair, this is definitely, in this industry, wages are, in my opinion, an absolute issue. It's been a challenge. It's tough to hear from workers who, or organizations that are serving this clientele, that are losing people to McDonald's, which is paying more, and when they're dependent on us to fund them. So I think that there's a very significant problem. The end result of what they do with this, because there are some models that I personally think are bad ideas and some that I think are good ideas. And mm-hmm. So the end result's going to make a significant difference in my final floor and ways and means vote. I think at this point I will be a no, just again to signify, please keep working on this.
Mm-hmm.
And you can quote me on that as well. But I'm going to hold out with a no at the moment just until we see what that work is.
So, and I guess what I would encourage people to think about, too, while putting comments on the record, is a yes vote means that you think it deserves further consideration, and if you're not happy with where it ends up, you could also be a no, so you could look at it that way.
Okay, Madam Chair, out of respect for you, I'll be a yes now, but I might be a no in ways and means, depending
right.
on how it comes out.
I mean, because I think what a no vote says is you think that this should not go forward, and my hope is that it goes forward for further consideration. It is very important, and we are taking really big looks in this session at the child welfare system, as well as you will hear later, the long-term care system, and we're looking at reimbursements and fines and accountability and quality measures and all of those kinds of things. And so that would be my hope, is that this goes forward and it deserves a chance to go forward and see where there can be some agreements.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, you've expressed my concerns. I will be voting yes because I like the concept. I like the idea of transparency. And I think there's some more work to do to ensure a population doesn't keep falling through the cracks. I'm not fully on board with the totality of the bill right now, but I do think it's worthy of further consideration.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, I do think that no's don't always signify you don't want it to move forward. Sometimes a couple of no's signifies there's work to be done.
Yeah.
So there's, it can go either way. But I know that there's a couple other no's that I will.
Yeah. I respect that, and I do agree that that's a signal. And when I start hearing a lot of no's, that's when I feel like, oh, there's another way to give a message here. So, okay, thank you for that.
Sorry, well, you just put the fear of God into my name down there.
This is discussion about the bills. It's okay. Any further discussion? All right, seeing none, Ashley, please call the roll.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative Meek?
Aye.
No.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative
Orso? Aye.
Representative
Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Courtesy, no.
Aye.
Chair Finnegar?
Aye. The motion passes. On to Ways and Means. Close the work session on House Bill 2684. Open a work session on House Bill 3273. Cassie, please read us a summary.
House Bill 3273 modifies requirements for care facilities. We last heard this bill on April 6th. The fiscal requires further analysis, and there is no revenue impact. And I believe we've talked about the amendment that will include fees for care facilities to come.
Yep. And I will.
Okay, so Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3273 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. and that the bill be referred to the House Committee on Rules.
Vice Chair also moves House Bill 3273 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the House Committee on Rules. Any discussion? Okay, I will start this discussion as well. We have been talking with the Oregon Healthcare Association, OCHA, and DHS and the Ombudsman Office and a whole variety of people who are actually in the room about long-term care, increasing quality at long-term care. And there are two bills on our docket right here. This one is the one that kind of came second to the first, and there's been less discussion on it. There's been a lot of good, robust discussion, but not agreements. And it's basically the amendment will be a gut and stuff of this bill, and it will have to do with fees and fines. And I think that we're close, but it's not ready. And rather than put any kind of numbers down, we thought it's just better to hold off, not bother LC and Legislative Fiscal Office, and wait till we have it. And so having it go to rules and have a few more days for that before it goes on to Ways and Means really makes sense. So you would be passing this on good faith that that discussion will happen, because the bill that ends up there is not going to look anything like this. It's just going to be a fees and fines bill. This was a placeholder, basically.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, was the motion with a due pass recommendation or without recommendation?
It was with a due pass, and if we would like to change that, I would be comfortable with that.
I would be more comfortable with a without recommendation, knowing that it's going to be a complete gut and stuff. Yep. But say, you know, yeah, keep on talking on the bill.
Okay. Can you withdraw your motion? Is everyone fine with that?
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, so you want me to withdraw? Okay, so Madam Chair, I withdraw the motion on House Bill 3273 to the floor with the due pass recommendation that it would be referred to the House Committee on Rules.
Any objection to that? No? Okay. Motion is withdrawn to the floor with a...
So move without recommendation
without
to House Rules. That's what it is.
So Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3273 to the floor without recommendation and that the bill be referred to the House Committee on Rules.
Vice Chair also moves House Bill 3273 to the floor without recommendation and that it be referred to the House Committee on Rules. Any discussion on that motion?
Thank you.
Thank you for that suggestion. Okay, any further discussion? Ashley, please call the roll.
Representative
Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative Meek?
Aye.
Representative
Hagan?
Aye.
Representative
Felisa?
Aye.
Representative
Strunk?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair
Kniegar? Aye. Okay, House Bill 3273 passes without recommendation to the Committee on Rules. Close the work session on House Bill 3273. Open a work session on House Bill 2377.
House Bill 2377 is about city and county exemptions for multifamily units for workers. We have a -3 amendment. The -3 amendment replaces the measure and permits a city or county governments to adopt an ordinance or resolution granting a property tax exemption for newly rehabilitated or constructed multi-unit rental housing. The amendment authorizes county assessors to rescind property tax exemptions upon the determination that the property no longer meets the requirements. The amendment sunsets the property tax exemption on January 2nd, 2027, and takes effect on the 91st day following sine die. We have the fiscal and revenue impacts, and the revenue impact requires further analysis. And there is a sub-referral to House Revenue.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the -3 amendments dated April 10th, 2017, into House Bill 2377.
Vice Chair Olson moves to adopt the -3 amendments dated April 10th, 2017, into House Bill 2377. Any discussion? Okay, I will add that I think that Representative Brock Smith has worked really hard on this. He had two major pieces to the bill. He dropped the one that created the most concern, which was around the homeowner piece. This really is a permissive action for cities to give property tax exemptions on the creation of rental housing units. He worked with Housing Community Services on the amendments. He took into account some of the technical concerns that the Polk County Assessor had. So I think he's worked really, really hard on this. Okay, any other discussion on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? All right, seeing none.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2377 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the House Committee on Revenue by prior reference.
Vice Chair also moves House Bill 2377 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the House Committee on Revenue by prior reference. Any further discussion on the bill? Or any discussion on the bill? All right, seeing none, please call the roll.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative
Meek? Aye.
Representative
Nierman? Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative
Luso?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Close the work session on House Bill 2377. Open a work session on House Bill 3063. Cassie?
House Bill 3063. Is the Mental Health Housing Fund. We have a dash one amendment. The dash one amendment requires Oregon Health Authority to fund the Mental Health Housing Fund and specifies that the money from the Mental Health Housing Fund be appropriated to OHA. The bill declares an emergency effective on passage. The fiscal is indeterminate and the revenue is minimal, and there is a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
So, Madam Chair, I move to adopt the dash one amendments dated April 14th, 2017.
Vice Chair Olson moves to adopt the dash one amendments dated April 14th, 2017. Any discussion on the amendments? Any objection? Seeing none, they pass.
I move House Bill 3063 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Olson moves House Bill 3063 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion on the bill? Good bill.
Should pass. Yeah, it was a good bill. Should pass. Okay.
Okay. All right. Ask for please call the roll.
Representative Gorsuch.
Thank you.
Yes.
Representative.
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Representative Noble.
Aye.
Representative
Luso. Aye.
Stark.
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson.
Yes.
Vice
Chair
Aye. Aye. Motion passes. Close the work session on House Bill 3063. Open a work session on House Bill 2996. Cassie?
House Bill 2996 is the first time home buyer's savings account. We last heard this bill on March 23rd. We have a dash two amendment. The dash two amendment establishes limits for subtraction from federal taxable income and exemption of contribution to first time home buyer's savings account based on outstanding student loan debt. The amendment provides Department of Revenue discretion to create a method for designating federal taxable income subtraction on the state income tax return form and requires financial institution that holds a first-time home buyer savings account to provide the account holder with a certificate. The fiscal and revenue both require further analysis, and there is a subsequent referral to House Revenue.
So, Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated April 14th, 2017.
Vice Chair Olson moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated April 14th, 2017. Any discussion on the amendments? Representative Meek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Dash 2 amendments address concerns that we heard related to narrowing the eligibility, decreasing the fiscal impact, and the unintended consequences of creating a tax shelter for the top 20%. My goal from the beginning has always been to help people save for the first-time home. And this, there's still needs to be a couple fixes to the Dash 2. The student debt, so just so you guys know, that the student debt, it allows for a subtraction of an annual student debt load from their AGI. And so that wasn't installed here. We want to still get that in there. And then the Department of Revenue is reviewing the Dash 2s, and that there's still some language that needs to be implemented. So those will still need to be some corrections, and hopefully we'll be able to wrangle those up at in revenue.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any other discussion? Okay. Any objection to the Dash 2 amendments? Seeing none, they are adopted.
Okay, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2996 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the House Committee on Revenue by prior reference.
Vice Chair also moves House Bill 2996 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the House Committee on Revenue by prior reference. Any discussion on the bill? All right, seeing none. Ashley, please call the roll.
Yes.
Aye.
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 Representative Luso?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice
Aye. Motion passes. The bill moves to the House Revenue. Close the work session on House Bill 2996. Open a work session on House Bill 2852.
House Bill 2852 is regarding affordable housing tax credits. We last heard this on February 21st. We have a Dash 3 amendment. The Dash 3 amendment requires Department of Revenue in collaboration with OHCS to conduct an auction of reserved tax credits to provide housing for low-income individuals and families with a priority to manufactured dwellings and manufactured dwelling parks no later than December 1st of the tax year for which the tax credits are allowed, and requires manufactured dwellings and manufactured dwelling parks preserved or replaced by the tax credit auction proceeds to be owned by specific entities. It also increases the cap of the tax credits to $25 million.
Okay. And we already adopted this.
Yeah. Yes. Lisa, okay. We already adopted the Dash 3.
We did?
Yep. We adopted the Dash 3 on the 13th.
Okay, thank you. So, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2852 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits by prior reference.
Vice Chair Olson moves House Bill 2852 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits by prior reference. Any discussion on the bill? Representative Meek and Representative Noble, thank you very much for working on this bill.
I did good.
Yep. Any comments before we take the vote? Increases the ceiling to 25
million. You got your
million.
Chance. Come on. it was good work. I thank Representative Noble that we kind of wrestled through these numbers and came up to, and our partners that were there at the table during the work group. And, we're looking forward to hopefully installing this and getting it, getting more affordable housing online, including a manufactured home parks. There are some great programs out there that are, I visited a manufactured home park that's working on a co-op on Friday, and the community was just so excited and happy with the opportunity. And if we can provide more funding for this, I think it's going to allow more folks to take their own destiny in their hands, and it's a great opportunity. So I thank Representative Noble for the work, and hopefully if we get to that cap, we come back and see if we need some more money.
Oh, I appreciate all the work in the committee, or the work group. It's not lost on me that this is the one tax credit that not just benefits those who finance and help build these, but actually is passed on to the people who actually need it and the people who are needing the housing. So it's very beneficial.
Thank you very much for your work on that. Okay. No other discussion? Ashley, please call the roll.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative Meek?
Aye.
Representative Nearman?
Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative
Dusa?
Aye.
Representative
Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Aye. The motion passes, and it is passed on to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits. Great. Thank you, Bill Van Vliet. I see you in the room. Thank you for your work on this. Okay, I think we are on House Bill 2372. All right. Got to close the work session on House Bill 2852, open a work session on House Bill 3370. Kathy, please read the summary.
House Bill 3370 defines Housing with Services Project and requires registration for Housing with Services Projects with DHS. The amendment, we have a Dash 1 amendment, and the Dash 1 amendment requires DHS to collaborate with OHCS and HUD, the federal government, to develop a joint inventory of Housing with Services Projects. The Dash 1 has no fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
So, Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated April 12, 2017.
Vice Chair also moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated April 12, 2017. Is there any discussion? Thank you very much, Vice Chair Sanchez, for working on this bill and bringing this amendment to us. All right. If there's, is there any objection to the amendments? Seeing none, they are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3370 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair also moves House Bill 3370 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the bill? Is there anything?
No. I'm good.
All right, Cassie. Ashley, please call the roll.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative
Aye.
Representative
Bierman? Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative Newsom?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Sanchez? Aye. Sorry.
Chair Kinnegan?
Aye. The motion passes. Vice Chair Sanchez, will you carry this on the floor?
Absolutely.
All right. Going to close the work session on House Bill 3370, open work session on House Bill 3155. Cassie, please read the summary.
House Bill 3155 establishes the task force on surplus lands for housing. We heard this on April 6th, we have a -7 amendment. The -7 amendment includes non-voting status for elected officials and includes OHCS, housing authorities, AOC, LOC, and ODOT as task force members. The fiscal is minimal and the revenue is no impact. We have been instructed by the Speaker's office to send task force bills to Ways and Means.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the -7 amendment dated April 17th, 2017.
Vice Chair Olson moves to adopt the -7 amendment dated April 17th, 2017. Any discussion on that? I'll just add that this is another one that Representative Brocksmith has worked hard on, getting to the -7. He incorporated some changes, including one that Representative Nierman caught on the difference between one voting member and one non-voting member. So thank you for your input on that. Any other discussions on the -7? Any objection? Seeing none, they are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3155 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Olson moves House Bill 3155 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any discussion on the bill? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Aye.
Representative
Bierman?
Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair
Kinnegar? Aye. Motion passes. It's on its way to Ways and Means. Close the work session on House Bill 3155. Open a work session on House Bill 2170. Cassie, please read the summary.
House Bill 2170 establishes the Oregon Ombudsman Office. We have a -2 amendment, and the -2 amendment requires further analysis on the fiscal and has a minimal revenue impact. And there's a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay. So, Madam Chair, I move to adopt the -2 amendments dated April 17th, 2017.
Vice Chair also moves to adopt the -2 amendments dated April 17th, 2017. Is there any discussion?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. The -2 amendments, just have to give credit, are a lot of hard work from the Department of Human Services, from Long-Term Care Ombudsman Fred Steele and DOJ. Really came together to make sure that everybody was speaking the same language. You know, when you go from a 45-page bill to a 70-page amendment to now a 76-page amendment, I did get word from DHS that there's a couple of small technical things, but I don't know what those are that they want to look at in Ways and Means. And then one other conversation that we will continue having as we look at the budget situation is we intentionally structured this so that the advisory groups that are overseeing each of these sectors of this, that they were not paid. We were trying to reduce the paid. We were trying to reduce the fiscal, and we have some people saying, hey, well, you know, if people are traveling into these meetings, they should be reimbursed. And so we purposely drafted it so they weren't, and that's been happening more and more this session given our current budget situation. It also makes sense that they are reimbursed for their expenses to get there. So we're going to have that conversation ongoing in Ways and Means as well.
Okay. And could you just refresh us on what the actual framework is?
So,
through several changes.
And Mr. Fred Steele can tell you the best, but I'll do my best, and if I butcher it, he can come up. The original heart of the bill was to create a foster parent ombudsman. One of the things I keep hearing from the community of foster parents and why we lose so many foster parents is that they want to have a voice. They want someone who goes to bat for them when things seem to not be functioning the way they should be. So we're trying to create a foster parent ombudsman, and we also wanted to take the foster child ombudsman out from underneath DHS so that if they are reporting, they're not reporting back to the same person they're investigating. Actually, they investigate more than just DHS. But So that was the original goal, but how to do that is complex. And so we are taking, we're basically creating the Oregon Office of Ombudsman, taking the different ombudsman groups that are in there, and we built a silo kind of for each group that is in there so that they're not having too much cross-reference back and forth. Put in some safeguards between the foster child and foster parent ombudsman to make sure that they are not communicating with one another, because that could be a conflict. And in so doing, it changes the role of the current long-term care ombudsman. It's assumed that the person who is currently in that role would be more of an advisory person or administration person over the entire thing. So that was complex when you dip your fingers into so many different arenas, and that's why it's taken so much work. And if you want more explanation, I can pull up someone else who can tell you the ins and outs of every word.
Okay, is that good enough for everyone to be able to vote on? Okay, and again, I want to thank you for enormous amount of work. You gave credit to everyone else, but I know you've been working really hard on this for a long time.
Thank you.
Okay, so any other discussion on the Dash 2 amendments? Any objections? Seeing none, they are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2170 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair also moves House Bill 2170 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion on the bill? Seeing none, Ashley, please call the vote.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Representative Nierman?
Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Aye.
Yes.
Vice
Chair
Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Yes. Okay, House Bill 2170 passes and is on to Ways and Means, and I close the work session on House Bill 2170. And open a work session on... Are we ready for this one?
We have everything.
Oh, okay. Open a work session on House Bill 2661. Cassie?
House Bill 2661 is the long-term care referral bill. We last heard this on February 21st. That's when we first heard it. We have a Dash 8 amendment that we adopted on the 13th. And the Dash 8 amendment is the one-and-done right to rescind. The Dash 8 amendment's fiscal requires further analysis, and there is no revenue impact.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2661 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, Vice Chair also moves House Bill 2661 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm going to be a no on this, and this isn't the worst bill in the world here, but there was some, and a lot of people put in a lot of work on this, and I appreciate that, but I wasn't all that happy with the process. So first of all, I think that at least in part the bill arose, it looked to me at least like one sector of the industry was trying to put a ball and chain on another sector of the industry, and that's not a good thing, and I don't think that's a healthy way to come up with regulatory legislation. The other thing is I'm kind of sensitive to introducing new regulations on industries, especially around this isn't really healthcare, but it's kind of in that arena there where costs kind of tend to spiral out of control. So I'm extra sensitive to putting new regulations on that. And that coupled with the fact that we didn't get a huge stream of aggrieved victims in the committee makes me kind of wonder on it. So I guess as far as regulations go, it's pretty tamped down, so it's reasonable in that sense. But I'll be a no just to be a friend, or as my friend Representative Olson says, a courtesy no.
Okay, and thank you for your explanation, and I'd love to respond to a few of them, having worked on this for many, many months. First of all, I want to thank all of the people out there who worked really hard on this. I know that there's a couple different business models out there, and to the degree that anything was said in this committee, in a public hearing, as well as behind closed doors, knocking another model down, I do not endorse that, and I have explained that privately to people, and I will say on record, I regret in the hearing, the public hearing that we had on, I think it was the second public hearing that we had, where we gave people an opportunity, proponents of the bills, an opportunity to express how they felt about the amendments. I was not happy with the video that was posted online, and I don't think that the bill should have been used to try to knock out a certain business model. What I really embraced about this bill was when I first came to the realization that there's absolutely no oversight of a whole business area that takes very vulnerable people and makes recommendations about where they're going to spend the last years of their life. And I was quite alarmed to learn that we have absolutely no oversight of that. And I think through all of the different business models coming together, actually, with advocates from the field and putting in place, and we considered licensing, we thought that was too much. We considered certification, we thought that was too much. Coming down to a once every two year registration process in which the people who are registered to do this work become aware or sign off on being aware of what the law is that puts into place some very basic consumer protections, I think is a very lean and mean, stripped down regulatory framework. And in that, what it requires is mandatory reporting for anyone that has direct contact, background checks for anyone that has direct contact with these vulnerable seniors, $1 million in liability insurance, disclosure forms so that people, the seniors or their family members, know exactly how payments are made and how their name and their health care information is used. I'm trying to think if there's a couple other basic things, and now I'm forgetting now. The right to rescind once they've been in a particular placement. If they have to leave that placement, either they may not have been happy with the service that led them to that placement, or they may have a pretty dramatic decline in their physical condition, which, like, for instance, a stroke, which might necessitate another placement and might mean that they need a different kind of referral agency. So I think this bill, you know, really I've relied, I appreciate the various business models, and I think we made room for all of them, and all of them have to step up in different ways that they haven't before. The boots on the ground type of groups that are going to have more direct contact are going to have more of an onus to do the mandatory reporting, background checks, liability insurance. They're smaller groups. They're going to have to pay a registration fee, maybe a more of a burden on them. And then the disclosure statements for the internet companies, that's going to be more of a, you know, I don't know about burden, but it's going to be more of a change in business for them. So I think that this was, I really appreciate all the groups that came to an agreement on what I think is a really important bill for an area that's had zero oversight before. Any other discussion on this? Representative Vice Chair Sanchez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to say that I have, of course, all the concerns that our chair has about this, about the industry initially, and then, of course, certainly wasn't appropriate for a little bit of a disrespectful discourse around other people in the industries. But I overall had just, even prior to this bill coming, overall had a concern about an industry that would hold your information for 2 years and not allow anybody else to come in to have conversation about those types of issues of long-term care. And I just think that, you know, every day new things will happen in this country and in this world because of where we are in terms of our technology and the things that we're moving towards, and we're every day going to have to look at different ways to deal with things. And it's not intended necessarily to stifle an industry, but to pay attention to how an industry intends to do things and maybe say that might not be appropriate. And that's the piece that was the biggest for me, is that an industry could say, you know, we're going to hang on to your information for 2 years and not allow you to have any other choices about who you work with. And I just felt like that was not appropriate. And so I feel like at this point in time, you know, we will probably look at it again at some point. We'll probably look at lots of other industries and lots of other issues again as we move forward in technology. We've sped it at the speed of light, literally, with lots of ways that we're looking at things, and they're all going to come to light over and over again. And it's going to be a challenge for this body and many others to, as we move forward, to do that. And I think that we're probably going to have to maybe pay attention a little bit more to that piece, but also just remember that entrepreneurs are out there, and sometimes we, over the years, have looked at different ways and had to, I don't necessarily say regulate, but at least pay attention to it and let people know, wait a minute, that might not be the best thing for everybody, for you to do it that way. So, thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair Kinnear. You know, I, similar to Rep. Nierman, was resistant to this bill, mostly because, you know, as I absolutely agree with Rep. Sanchez that as things change, we need to be continuing to watch and see if we need to adapt to whatever models are out there that might be harmful or destructive. I do know that, but I'm always nervous about any time I feel like we're messing with someone's contract, and we do that in so many things. I mean, our stinking cell phones, how it's like getting out of a cell phone contract, I mean, that goes for years, right? You know, there's different cable, it's very normal for industries to have a contract that goes for several years. Mm-hmm. I'm never a fan of those, but so I tend to pay more to not be on those. That being said, you know, that's part of business is contracts, and anytime we start fiddling with contracts, I'm uncomfortable. That being said, I am going to be a yes, because I really appreciate the groups that came together and came up with something that I think was a great compromise, even though I'm not 100% pleased, but I think it's I want to acknowledge their hard work and that they came to something that I think makes sense. So
thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I just wanted to thank all the folks that were involved with the work group, and when I started getting involved, basically trying to understand the industry, the biggest thing is that, and my very, you know, I'm very happy to see the disclosure, because whether you're the consumer and you're getting something, you're not paying for it or not, the biggest thing is that they fully acknowledge and recognize that, yes, I agree with, you know, yes, I appreciate you're going to get paid, it doesn't cost me anything, wonderful, and but as long as they move freely forward with this program that they've agreed to work with, that's the biggest thing, so that they intelligently, knowingly accept the terms of the agreement and then get the services that they requested. So that, to me, was the most important part, that the, you know, the end user that's going to be getting the service really understands the situation that they're bringing themselves to agree to. So that's why I thank the work groups, and I thank everybody's work on this committee.
Thank you. Okay. Any other discussion? All right. Ashley, please call the roll.
Yes.
Aye.
No.
Representative Noble.
Aye.
Representative Peluso.
Aye.
Representative Stark.
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes and is on its way to Ways and Means. Close the work session on House Bill 2661. Open a work session on House Bill 2007.
House Bill 2007 establishes the first priority for affordable housing development. And we have a -2 amendment. The -2 amendment replaces the measure and specifies requirements for a city or county to take final action on an application to develop a multifamily residential building with at least 50% of the units sold or rented as affordable housing within 100 days of completion. The amendment also requires the Department of Land Conservation and Development to study housing development in cities and including the timeline to complete the application for housing development and issue a certificate of occupancy. And that becomes operative January 1st, 2018, and the amendment declares an emergency effective on passage. We heard about this amendment on the 13th from the speaker. And we have the fiscal, and the fiscal requires further analysis, and the revenue is no impact.
So, Madam Chair, I move the -2 amendments dated April 14th, 2017, House Bill 2007.
Vice Chair also moves to adopt the -2 amendment dated April 14th, 2017. Any discussion?
Yes.
Thank you, Chair Kinnegar. I love this bill with the -2 amendments. I convinced the Speaker to let me sign off as a co-chief. I like that we're taking a look at the supply side and saying, look, the areas that everybody agrees we should be building, we're going to build. And we want to make sure that if you're building affordable housing, we're doing it in the fastest way realistically possible. And we also want to tell communities, look, you don't get to mess around in discretionary areas. If it's zoned for 10 units, then let them build 10 units, because that's the area that we want them to have a quick expansion. And I also like, you know, the pastor in me here, I like that we're making it open for churches and religious organizations to try something new in the affordable housing arena. So I'm really excited about where this can go. And I want to remind all of you guys, it only takes a couple seconds to jump online and hit the little add button to add your name as a co-sponsor.
There you go. So.
Great.
Really?
That's good. <weird. laughs>
It takes a little more work to be a chief sponsor.
You know?
Yeah. Just a little more work to be a chief sponsor.
We got this message was brought to you by our co-sponsor.
I do like that bill, too.
Okay. Any further discussion on the amendments? Any objection? Seeing none, they're adopted.
So, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2007 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Vice Chair also moves House Bill 2007 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any discussion on the bill?
Well, I'm really pleased with where this is at. I mean, it's exciting. And honestly, John Chandler, I don't know what he did with the speaker to get her there. I mean,
and he's still looking excellent. Over the shoulder of 1,000 friends.
It is. Yeah, that
making
was
sure they don't change their mind. Yeah, it's really good collaboration from a lot of different partners who are not always at the table together. So very appreciated and very good work. Thank you for joining on to that. All right. Ashley, please call the roll.
Representative Garza?
Yes.
Representative Meek?
Aye.
Representative
Nierman? Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative
Palooza? Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair
Kuzar? Aye. Motion passes, and it's on its way to Ways and Means, and I close the work session on House Bill 2007. Open a work session on House Bill 3331.
House Bill 3331 establishes a landlord-tenant dispute resolution program in the Office of Manufactured Homes. We do have the fiscal and revenue. The fiscal is $150,000 of other funds, and the revenue has no impact.
So, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3331 to the floor with the due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the House Committee on Rules.
Vice Chair Olson moves House Bill 3331 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the House Committee on Rules. Any discussion?
I guess, you know, I know that the coalition didn't get there with Chuck Carpenter and John Van Landingham. I greatly appreciate and respect both those guys having been involved in this whole process. I mean, Human Services for the last 8 years, but I'm struggling with even moving forward with this down to rules. I'm hoping that something comes out of there, but I'm going to be a no.
Okay. And from my point of view, I would like it to go to rules. I would like it to live longer as the discussions go forward with tenant protections. I was very compelled by the story of the guy who's rent went from somewhere around 250 to 800 in a couple of years, and he had to walk away from that. I think it's a big problem. I'd like the discussion to see the discussion continue. As I said in the last time we talked about this, there's probably always going to be a very bright green light when the coalition has really worked through it and all the stakeholders are there. It's a yellow light, possibly a red light, for when the coalition has not worked through the issues. But I think those issues deserve consideration. It's a harder path. It's unlikely to be a unanimous path, but I think there needs to be a path for discussions in the future. So with that, I will be voting yes. Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. Ashley, please call the roll.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative
Meade? Aye.
Representative Nierman?
No.
Representative Noble?
No.
Representative
Palooza? Aye.
Representative Stark?
No.
Vice Chair Olson?
No.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair.
Aye. Okay, the motion passes. The bill is sent to the House Committee on Rules, and I close the work session on House Bill 3331. Open a work session. Last one, House Bill 3359. Cassie?
House Bill 3359 was heard on April 6th. We have a dash one amendment. The dash one amendment replaces the measure and makes legislative findings regarding the value of community-based facilities, and that state policy is to promote autonomy of residents and to ensure that administrators of these facilities are licensed no later than July 1st. And this sunsets December 31st, 2019. The amendment also establishes the residential care quality measurement program within the Department of Human Services and requires that they report on data performance trends, regulatory violations, surveys, investigations, and other related areas of residential care quality. This section becomes operative January 1st, 2020. The amendment also requires the department to develop a framework for assessing compliance of facilities that measure compliance and the extent of noncompliance, and directs the department to develop or obtain a technology-based, acuity-based staffing tool that is made available to facilities to assess staffing needs. The amendment also outlines other quality measurements applicable to residential care facilities. And I believe that is all. There's a lot to it. So that's kind of a high-level overview. I could read through the double page.
Well, and you're going to hear more about it, but let's hear the motion first.
So I move to adopt, Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 Amendment dated April 10th, 2017.
Vice Chair also moves to adopt the Dash 1 Amendment dated April 10th, 2017. Okay, so for discussion, I've invited Phil and Ashley to come and present. They sat through an entire hearing, I think it was April 6th, and waited to the end, and we ran out of time where they were going to explain this bill. So the dash one that we're considering right now is a complete gut and stuff, and it is the result of a year's worth of work. Really a year's worth of work, and I really want to thank OCA for the Purple Ribbon Commission that it put together. We had a representative, Caddy McCune, and I, after a session that we had in Human Services last year, hearing about some of the issues that arose, put together a kind of scrappy task force committee without having officially passed it at the legislature. We wanted to work on it anyway, and then OCA stepped in and put together a more formal Purple Ribbon Commission that came up with a booklet that you've probably seen, and there have been many parties, the Ombudsman's Office and others, who have been at the table working very hard on what I hope will be, will put Oregon in the place of being the top in the country on taking care of our senior citizens that are in community facilities. So I really want to thank enormous work that you and other people in the work group have put forward. And so we never had the opportunity to kind of walk through each of the different pieces. It's a very significant bill, and it deserves the chance. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair Kenny Guyer, Vice Chairs Olson, Sanchez, members of the committee. My name is Phil Bentley with the Oregon Healthcare Association, and I just wanted to kind of take Chair Kenny Guyer's lead here and also thank her, Representative McEwen, the Speaker's Office, and so many others who were involved in this bill. As the Chair said, this has been a work product from at least a year's worth of work, and I think that we're all very pleased to be here today and be able to present to you the Dash 1 Amendment, which is effectively a complete replacement of the existing bill, although it does include a lot of the concepts in the base bill. The amendment also includes concepts that were originally put forward in House Bills 3272 and 3273, as well as some new ideas that came up during the course of our work group conversations. My objective this morning is to run through roughly half of the bill, and then Ms. Carson Cottingham from APD is also going to discuss the other half. So the first thing I would note about the Dash 1 Amendment is the new requirements around training for direct care workers. This was one of the recommendations from the Purple Ribbon Commission. We felt strongly the commission did that nexus between the caregiver and the resident is one of the most essential and significant points of contact and probably the most significant area where we can improve the quality of care. So briefly, The bill requires a pre-service training on dementia care. And something I should add is that the focal point of the bill is to improve quality care for people with dementia and Alzheimer's. And there was originally, I think, a focus on memory care, but we've also broadened that to non-memory care settings, so just garden variety, ALF and RCF settings, as well as a little bit in the adult foster home.
RCF, what that stands for?
Sorry, thank you. So basically, assisted living residential care communities that are not endorsed as memory care. There are many people who have dementias and Alzheimer's in those settings. They're not all just in memory care settings. In fact, more people are serving outside of memory care than just in those settings. So before somebody could start providing care, they will be required to go through a comprehensive training around dementia. I'll just touch on some of the training subjects that would be covered. They need to be educated on the disease process of dementia that includes its progression, memory loss, psychiatric and behavioral symptoms. They would be required to learn techniques for understanding and managing those symptoms, including but not limited to reducing the use of antipsychotic medications, strategies for addressing the social needs of persons with dementia and providing meaningful activities, as well as information on addressing specific aspects of dementia care and ensuring the safety of residents with dementia, including how to address pain, provide food and fluids, and prevent wandering and elopement. One of the other aspects of the bill regarding the training is that the training, the objective here is to help caregivers as well. So they would receive a certification that they completed this training that would be good for up to 2 years that they could take to another community that gives them a little bit of a portability and a skill set. And the idea is also that they would have a competency certification that they've completed this training and demonstrated some competency. And I know that was important to the representatives that it's not just an hours requirement or a check the box situation, but you actually have demonstrated an understanding and your ability to enter into a facility with some competency around these areas. And then there's also a new requirement to increase the hours and expand the scope of this requirement for continuing education. So there will now be a 6-hour annual requirement that direct caregivers receive training on dementia care, Alzheimer's care, and that again will apply to workers in memory care settings as well as regular assisted living. I would also note that this is one of the provisions that will be applied to workers in the adult foster home settings. Most of the bill does not reach into the adult foster home settings, with a few exceptions, and this is one. And I would also note that I believe this will put Oregon in, as Chair Kenny Geyer said, is one of the leaders in the training requirements for direct care workers. So the next big initiative from the Purple Ribbon Commission that's in the bill and again in the dash ones is the introduction of quality measures for what we call community-based care. This is something that's being done in skilled nursing at the direction of CMS, and it's a concept that has been very successful there in driving outcomes. And the bill here would create we would start with certain quality measures that now would be required to be tracked and reported to the department and would also be publicly available, and some analysis would be done so that you as policymakers, consumers, would have the ability to know how we're doing on these key measures. And those would include the incidence of falls with injury in the community, staff retention, compliance with staff training requirements, the use of antipsychotic medications for non-standard purposes, and the satisfaction of residents' experiences. I think we all know that the satisfaction of the residents and their families is probably one of the strongest indicators of how a community is doing. And as I said, these would be reported, these would be available to the department, to consumers, policymakers, and there will be a quality metrics council that will be able to review this process, update those quality measures, and kind of help lead this process going forward. The next provision is related to enhanced oversight and supervision. I think what we know is that at any given time, we do have a small percentage, generally, of communities that are underperforming. And the commission suggested that we should target this agency's resources to, in certain circumstances, provide enhanced oversight, which means that they could be subject to more frequent surveys. We currently have a survey process that's a two-year interval, and that may not be appropriate in certain circumstances, and this would provide direction to the agency to establish a program whereby they could be surveyed quarterly or annually, whatever was appropriate given their performance or non-performance on surveys and the quality metrics and those other factors that would indicate the need for that oversight. And then finally, for my portion, there is a piece in here. While the Purple Ribbon Commission recommendations were a little bit broader than just residential care settings, they wanted to touch a number of touch points for people with Alzheimer's and dementia. One of the pieces that didn't kind of survive this round is a community outreach program. There's a couple other pieces that I think we'll be coming back in 2018 to have a conversation about. But one point that was made during the course of our hearings on this issue was that there are physicians that see people with Alzheimer's and dementia, and they may not be up to date or most current on how to best to treat those folks. And so there is suggestive language in here to the Oregon Medical Board to encourage people such as primary care physicians and those treating geriatric patients, those types of things, to make sure that they're taking those continuing education opportunities so that they're up to date on the best way to treat folks. So, again, I just want to thank you for all your leadership, Chair Kenny Geyer and the others involved, and I'll turn it over to Ms. Carson Cunningham.
Thank you, Mr. Bentley. Good morning. I'm Chair Kenny Geyer, Vice Chairs, members of the committee. I'm Ashley Carson Cunningham, the Director for Aging and People with Disabilities at the Department of Human Services. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 3359. The department is extremely committed, and I am very personally committed, to the safety of vulnerable older adults and people with disabilities. Our goal at the department is to work really closely with providers to ensure that our collective system is of extremely high quality in Oregon. While the department is neutral on this bill, I want to cover the remaining items that Mr. Bentley started with. So, in the Dash 1 amendment, there is a provision called the acuity-based staffing tool. And this is a provision the department, through the Long-Term Care Quality Fund, was able to utilize some monies to develop a tool whereby we can enter in the acuity of residents and facilities and the staffing plan of the facility, and out would sort of, through an algorithm, pop the number of staff that should be there to meet the residents' needs. Based on a number of circumstances at the time, a small amount of money was dedicated to that tool being developed, and it's not online or as easy to use as we might like for both our staff and providers who might want to use it. So this bill would direct the department to put that line into a more easy-to-use online style of tool so we can easily enter in that information quickly, working side-by-side with the facility, and then talk about the staffing needs of the facility. It would also require the department, when we see a staffing issue in the facility, to utilize that tool prior to placing a condition on the facility's license regarding the number of staff they need to meet the particular residents' needs that are living there at that time. We also had a lot of discussion about independent licensure for administrators in residential care and assisted living. The nursing home administrators are accountable to a professional board. And so what we worked through is that in the legislative findings section, it states that administrators of residential care facilities, including assisted living and the memory care endorsed facilities, should be licensed by an independent board by July of 2019, following a process to establish a new requirement. We felt that we needed to have a lot more discussion about what those requirements would look like and give current administrators plenty of time to potentially meet those requirements and really have a fuller discussion. It wasn't really ripe yet. The third provision that I'll mention is specially packaged medications. So this would require residential care facilities and adult foster homes to work with pharmacies that do packaging, either bubble or blister packs, unit dose, and other methodologies. And this would be to try to cut back on medication errors. And so that would be a really big improvement because we do see a lot of medication issues. It would revise the language in current law to allow the department to do an immediate suspension if there's a very, very serious critical health, safety, welfare issue in a residential care facility without waiting 10 days for a hearing. It doesn't mean that the facility loses due process rights. There are extensive due process rights to go in and contest that immediate suspension. But right now, the department doesn't have the ability to go in and immediately suspend and require either residents to move or a management company to come take over operations when there's a critical incident. And we have that ability in the other setting types. Arbitration clauses. It requires disclosures for binding arbitration clauses in long-term care contracts and prevents admission to a facility being contingent upon signing that agreement. And this is something that we've seen happen where a resident is under sort of duress. It's a very tough time usually for families or people who need to move into long-term care. And so we simply just wanted there to be more disclosures and an understanding of what they're signing in the event that something occurs later on. And as Phil said, it's not common that something occurs later on, but we just want to make sure we're protecting resident rights.
Can I ask a question off of that?
Yes.
Hey, Ashley, thank you, Madam Chair. On Section 13 on the binding arbitration, mm-hmm. I am reading through that, and I see that it appears to be permissive that the facility may enter into an agreement for binding arb.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm just kind of curious how you got to that point for it just being permissive.
Well, I think facilities and Phil might want to jump in, but facilities have always been able to enter into alternative dispute resolution agreements with residents. And this simply just adds some protections. Like, they can still do that. They just need to have a more robust discussion and have more disclosures. And that if the resident says, or potential resident says, I don't want to sign that, then the facility can't say, you can't live here then.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything to add?
No, I think that's a fair representation. Chair Kenny Guy, Representative Olson, this is one of the issues that we talked about during the work group, and I would suggest that it's a kind of a compromise point that still permits a provider to have a arbitration clause in their rental agreement, but does not allow them to deny access or deny services to someone if they choose not to sign that provision.
Very good. Thank you.
The next section that I'll mention is that in law right now, for adult foster homes, they're required to be able to evacuate all residents, up to 5 residents, within 3 minutes. And some foster home providers have installed sprinkling systems inside their homes. And so this is simply a provision that allows, if they've gone to that next level of installing a sprinkling system, that then they only need to be in alignment with the local fire life safety code, and that 3-minute evacuation wouldn't apply to them. It creates a special license type. It's a smaller residential care facility license type for 6 or fewer individuals. And those are for individuals that we serve that have significant co-occurring behavioral health needs and would benefit from a smaller environment. It also creates a conversion facility license, and this is to address the fact that we have over time heard from nursing home operators, and as we transition to having fewer and fewer nursing homes in the state because the goal is more community-based care and in-home care, some of those operators would like to convert their facility into community-based care, and some of the requirements around residential care facility licensure are hard for those facilities to meet, some of the physical plant requirements, those types of things. And so we wanted to be able to create a a type that a nursing home operator could move to while working towards being more in the community-based care realm, and they would need to be in alignment with community-based care standards. It would also require the department to create an interpretive guidelines manual. Oftentimes, there's a lot more guidance for nursing home operators. There's been a lot of progress at the federal level, as Phil mentioned. And so this would require the department to create a similar manual to what nursing home operators use to interpret all of the rules and regulations. And then lastly, it would require the department to create online training modules based on the top issues that we see or identify when we're in the facilities doing our surveys or annual inspections or every other year inspections. Lastly, I just want to say thank you to the chair, also to Representative McEwen, Speaker Kotek, and all of the staff that have worked on this bill, and also a shout out to the Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman, because they've worked really hard and collaboratively to make sure that we land in a good place. And we believe that the ideas put forward here will greatly improve long-term care services and support for Oregon seniors and people with disabilities. Thank you for your time today.
Any questions? You can see it's a huge, huge work. Representative Nierman.
Good. Thanks, Madam Chair. This is kind of a lot to digest here. So I'm interested in the acuity tool. Does that exist anywhere? Does that work, or do any other states do that, or any other?
Chair Kenny Geyer, excuse me, Representative Nierman, and I will, Phil, if you would like to jump in as well. We believe that it will work, and there are a lot of tools that providers already have. Different companies have created or purchased their own type of tool that would help them know exactly how to staff. Our understanding in working with the Oregon Healthcare Association is that one of the issues is that there's not like a common yardstick. So the department will sometimes come in and say, oh my gosh, you don't have enough staff. And the facility will say, well, we've been working through this, and we're the most closely connected to it, and we do have enough staff. And so this would allow us to look at the same tool and have the conversation and really try to agree on what the right number of staff would be.
I'll just be happy to add to that, Chair Kenny Geyer, Representative Nierman. Assisted living providers are required to staff based on the acuity level of the residents in their communities, and that can vary fairly significantly. So over time, many providers have developed their own kind of staff modeling tools to help inform them how they should best staff. They're also held to that standard by the department, and I think some years ago there was an initiative put forward to have the department develop a tool that it could utilize to provide a little more objective activity to this determination. We in this bill are supporting kind of rolling that out to more of a web-based portal so that it is available to providers who may be smaller and don't have their own software system, and also something that we would encourage the department to use more regularly when they're assessing staffing levels and their appropriateness.
Thank you. Can I follow one short follow? Is it the intention of this bill that be provided at no cost to the providers? But the tools at no cost. You talk about a web portal then, right?
Chair Kenny Geyer, Representative Nierman. Yes, it's my understanding that the web-based portal would be the development or the next phase of it would be supported by funds in the Quality Fund, and then it would be available to providers at no cost to them.
It's a tool developed by DHS then? I think this is DHS then, right? And DHS would own the tool and allow the providers to just use the tool then, right?
Chair Kenny Geyer, Representative Nierman. Yes, that's our expectation of how that would be available.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Yes.
Not a question, just a comment, that I am very grateful and thankful for the work that you all have done around this. And law enforcement associates, I remember back, well now like 30 years, when we would get calls for someone just wandering the streets and without any resources to deal with those sorts of things. senile was the word that was used, or just plain nuts, on our aging population. And so to get to this point where the right safeguards are being put in place, you know, we would bring somebody in and literally in handcuffs because we didn't know what to do with them, and put them in a holding cell. And, you know, that's our aging population. And as I'm in that aging population now, it resonates a little stronger. But you've done fabulous work around this. I appreciated the visits to the office. Because it's just doing, it's making my heart feel much better as far as doing the right thing for the right reasons. So thank you so much for everybody that's been involved with this.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, thank you very much for working on this. I think the acuity tables or those types of formulas, and I can relate this to if we go to a mechanic and he says you're going to need a new transmission, and he can give us an estimate, basically, because he knows it's going to take 3.5 hours to rebuild that transmission, or it's going to take a half an hour to do an oil change or whatever it is. If we set up a basis of it's going to take this many hours or this much supervision to handle this person, and if we're going to do 4 or 5 transmissions in a day as a business, we know we need this so many hours available for this mechanics or these mechanics to provide this service. So it's very similar. If we can set those standards and set up some type of tables and processes so we can kind of gauge, well, if you're going to have these many folks with this acuity level, et cetera, you're going to need to provide this many hours of service or help. So great work. Thank you very much.
I mean, I'll just ditto all that. I want to say, first of all, there's a lot of interest. A part of that is because we've heard from constituents, or you've read stories about some of the cases that have really gone wrong, and of course that's what grabs attention. We know there's a lot of very good operators out there who are working really well, and we don't want to have to wait to kind of, you know, put down our hammer when something goes wrong. And so that is really the attempt here is, yes, there's the accountability pieces in the fees and or the fine bill that we have passed without recommendation under rules. Mm-hmm. But really the focus of this entire bill is how do we increase the standards and how do we put the tools in place to get there? Mm-hmm. And it requires more in terms of raising, you know, to a gold standard from both the department and the facilities. For the facilities, they're going to now have very clear objectives and standards and quality metrics that will go online. And so they're, you know, that's a kind of a voluntary way of getting people to step up if their metrics are going to show up online. And then for the department, you know, having to come up with acuity tools, not coming after something's gone wrong and say, you're not staffing to the right level, but really trying to work, develop a tool that can be used, and to Rep. Nierman's point and question, apples to apples, be able to compare that and really work with people. We also know that workforce issues are really big, particularly in the rural part of the state, and so rather than jumping to a we need CNAs with the medication piece, which is how some other states do it, we know that's a challenge for us. So trying to get around that with the bubble packaging of the medication so that fewer mistakes will be made and that you can train people. The training to competency-based standards as opposed to, you know, hours in the seat for training, I think, is really critical. So there's so many pieces here that I'm really excited about. Again, I want to thank you and the ombudsman and Taylor Smiley Wolf, who led the meetings to say, okay, decision point, every single week. You know, much the role that Cheryl Hiemstra did in Department of Justice for the House Bill 2661. Both of you, I didn't mention during the 2661 long-term care referral, were a part of that discussion too. So they go a little bit hand in hand. I think we've done a lot for seniors on these issues with the three bills that we're passing out of committee today. So I really want to thank you. Yes.
Thank you, Chair Kinnegar. I know we don't have a motion yet, but I'll comment on my vote.
Well, we do have a motion on the dash one, which is basically a gotten stuff. So.
Great. Well, then I'll comment on my vote.
Right.
So I'm going to be a yes, but internally I may proceed with caution. Mm-hmm. You know, there's, as our eloquent committee staff put it, there's a lot in here. And so what I've done is I've actually sent this out to some people in my district that own and operate, you know, different dementia facilities and so forth, just to really get a look at what does this actually mean on the ground level once they implement it. And I haven't heard back from some of them just yet because, well, you know, things are moving fast up here. And so I am, because I do have some minor concerns. The acuity-based model, I struggle with that. But I think the alternative is worse. You know, so I understand why we're moving to that. But really, the acuity-based model is an analytical answer to a people problem. And the reality of staffing on the ground level based on, you know, somebody can have it overnight. Something can happen with someone, and all of a sudden they have a different acuity base, which changes your staffing model. And when you're actually trying to implement that with the hiring and firing or laying off of or keeping on of people, that can really mess with just day-to-day operations for an organization. That being said, I don't think a straight staffing ratio is better. You know, so I don't know what the solution to that is.
And well, and to, so, just to respond and ask a question about that, my understanding with the acuity-based model is that's a guideline, and that you don't actually come in and mandate certain ratios unless something's gone wrong, and then you have the ability to go into a facility and say, you need to, because there's continual problems, you need to have this kind of ratio. But other than that, the acuity model is not, here's what it says, here's what you have to do, but here's a guideline. Am I right in interpreting that?
Chair Kenninger, I think that that's accurate. That, I mean, right now, guideline. As Phil had mentioned, the providers are supposed to staff for the planned and unplanned needs of residents, and that's difficult to do because, as Representative Stark mentioned, something can change overnight. So I think the goal with the tool is that you can enter those changes and that it's really person-centered, that one facility is going to look so much different from the next because each person's needs will be entered into the tool. Based on, you know, how many times they need assistance with toileting or how much they need help in and out of bed or showering, et cetera. So it's really person-centered approach, which I think will be valuable, but it is a guideline. And the only requirement is that if we're sort of at an impasse with the provider and we're saying there's not enough staff and we enter it all into the tool before we, the department, can place a condition, which we have the ability to do right now. And as Phil mentioned, you know, we don't have very many facilities. It's about 5% of the 518 residential care assisted living facilities that we have to do a condition on over the course of a year. And so it would be of that 5%, a subset that might have a staffing problem, we would sit down with and enter all of the person-specific information in, and out would pop the recommendation, and then we might... the facility could also then agree and just staff to that, or we could proceed and actually do a condition.
Which they can do now.
Right.
They can do a condition now.
So
it's more of an objective tool to kind of...
Yeah, and so, Chair Kenninger, and I really do think the acuity-based model is progress. So I'm not meaning to knock it that much, but it is still problematic. Because even though it's a kind of a guideline, that sets up best practices for an industry. And when you set up best practices for an industry, if they're not practicing that, then it also makes them more vulnerable to lawsuits. And you have to, and I think the agency carries a huge amount of weight here on when they err on the side of safety, which is always good, and when they err on the side of grace, to make sure that, you know, the agency has to walk a fine line here of making sure that they really are walking as companions with these groups, mm-hmm. to help them perform in the best way possible, to take care of people in the best way possible, mm-hmm. as opposed to coming in and regulating and shutting down. And you guys do a fantastic job overall, I think. You know, but I just think it's a delicate system, and we're doing a lot to it. And so we just really need to make sure that we watch how this unfolds to make sure that we really are doing what's best for people and these organizations. So,
and my view, that is exactly, you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly the intent, is not to do what we've been doing in the past, which is just to come in with the fines or the conditional responses at the end. It's like, how can we work together to make quality metrics and training, competency based training, acuity staffing tool, so that we're working together on the prevention side. I mean, I think that's what Phil and Oka has continually said, is how do we, and that was the Purple Ribbons Commission goal, was how do we really beef up the prevention side so we're not always focused on the, you know, the hammer at the end. So
So I have this line open here. It says, in a case where imminent danger to health or safety of the residents exists, a residential care facility license may be suspended immediately. So that's so there is the
well, and that's still there. That's is there now as well.
Yeah. So that's again, I go back to earlier no vote I had today where I'm nervous about in healthcare or human care kind of things to over-regulate industry and drive costs up or whatever. Or the other thing is that this is the new 1515, and we'll be back in the next session trying to fix it or whatever. I don't know if that's the case or whatever, but anyway, I have some worries about this bill. So.
Yeah, and having lived a little bit through 1515 too, I think that, you know, that was a little more focused on the end part. And so we've really made an attempt to deal with what are the things that you can put in place before you get to the fines. That's how I view it, having been involved in both these issues. But any response, particularly from you, Phil, on that? Because certainly you had concerns in the process that it not end up being all over here, that you've continually tried to drive it into the prevention side.
Chair Kenny Guy, Representative Stark, Nierman, the committee. I think what I would say about what you have before you in the dash ones is that it is an attempt to strike a balance. We were concerned initially that we were going to get an overly prescriptive approach to providing care. And we live in a world of person-centered care where what one person needs is very different than what another person needs. And we do have, you know, challenges that we're all facing in terms of workforce, rising acuity levels in assisted living. And, you know, these present challenges on a day-to-day basis for providers. The department, I would also say, has been applying some of their regulatory authorities differently in the last year or so, and that's been a change. And so we just really wanted, I think, get a handle around a lot of these issues that were coming up, issues that were being raised by both constituents and legislators, and find a balance point where we were moving the ball forward without being overly prescriptive. And what I would say about the quality measures that we've touched on, this is an opportunity for providers to compete on quality. They're going to be held accountable to meeting key metrics. They're going to be publicly disclosed. We think that's a more positive approach to incentivize than to simply, you know, be overly prescriptive and say you have to do all these things or you're going to get fined a bazillion dollars, so to speak. And I think that's how we lead in this area, and it's not going to be perfect. There are things in here that are going to be challenging for providers to do tomorrow. This is going to require resources. It's going to require a doubling of their commitment to some of the requirements in here. And we're hopeful that we've set this up in a time frame and in a way that we'll be able to work for them, but you know, we're gonna have to see how this all plays out. But I think that in general we find this is a balanced approach.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair Kenny. Sorry to keep talking on this. Kind of a response to Rep. Nierman on the reference to 1515, and a reminder if you're new, that's referring to a residential facility bill that we dealt with in 2016, that there were a lot of ramifications
for foster kids.
For foster children. And but as we learn from that, one more time I will make this point, how the department implements this can make a drastic difference on the outcome of it. You know, so if they're going into it with we are partners in this industry versus we are enforcers in this industry, it makes a world of difference on the end result, and even if we have to make adjustments down the road.
Mm-hmm. So. That's an excellent point, Representative Stark. Okay.
Can I make one comment?
Yes, please.
Chair Kenigayer, Rep. Stark, I think that's a really good point, and Mr. Bentley mentioned that we've changed our regulatory approach somewhat. I think you know, it was pointed out to us, I think, last session that we weren't really using our full authority under law to keep people safe, and we probably should have acted more quickly. And so I took this position, and we've been trying to use our full regulatory authority. But that's only, you know, when using that authority when people's lives are at risk and there's a serious issue. You know, we're committed to working with providers. We've put a team in place that is not the survey team, but it's a lighter touch approach team that would go in when we receive complaints and work with the provider. So there's no fines or penalties. It's, you know, hey, this issue, we see this issue, can you start doing this and that? It's more of a technical assistance approach so that we really build those relationships at the local level. And we've done a lot of work to try to make sure our adult protective services investigators are being more communicative. We have a long way to go, but our goal really is to work with the providers closely. We need our providers, and so many of them are doing a wonderful job. And we're having to spend the time on the ones that aren't doing so hot. And so we would love nothing more than to have some of the tools that are in this proposed bill where those issues never come up and our resources aren't needed and they can do what they're good at and we can turn our attention to other things. So we're committed to that approach as well.
And the focus is really on helping all the facilities know what kind of staffing they need, help with the clear expectations around quality metrics, which I know you're drawing from what's happening at the national level too. So facilities are really a huge part of leading that conversation on helping all of them raise the standard. So I really just want to emphasize that so much of this bill is around the prevention side, the quality enhancement side on staffing and training and quality metrics and all those kinds of things. I'm just so enormously pleased with how it's come together. So thank you for the Purple Ribbon Commission that really put those, really drove it from the industry, you know, really was an industry-led effort and in deep cooperation with DHS and a lot of other players. So anyway. Okay, any other discussion on the amendments? Any objection to the amendments? Seeing none, they are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3359 is amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Olson moves House Bill 3359 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion on the bill?
Yes.
Seeing none. Ashley. Oh, yes, Representative Nierman.
I'll be a no on this, but I'll reserve the right to have my mind changed and be a yes on the floor.
Okay.
Yes.
Representative
Meek?
Aye.
Representative
Nierman? No. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. House Bill 3359 moves on to Ways and Means and close the work session on House Bill 3359. Before we adjourn, Cassie, can you just make sure that we've gone through every single bill today?
Yeah, be assured.
Just hold on, everybody. Want to make sure our last attempt.
Yeah. So we moved House Bill 2008 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. House Bill 2433, due pass as amended to Joint Ways and Means. House Bill 3253, due pass to House Rules. House Bill 2684, due pass to Ways and Means. House Bill 3273, due pass to House Rules. Or I think that one we did without recommendation. Without recommendation to House Rules. House Bill 2377, due pass as amended to House Revenue. Yeah? Okay. House Bill 3063, due pass as amended to Joint Ways and Means. House Bill 2996, due pass as amended to House Revenue. House Bill 2852, due pass as amended to Joint Committee on Tax Credits. House Bill 3370, due pass as amended to the floor. House Bill 3155, due pass as amended to and add Joint Ways and Means. House Bill 2170, due pass as amended to Ways and Means. House Bill 2661, due pass as amended to Ways and Means. House Bill 2007, due pass as amended to Ways and Means. House Bill 3331, due pass to Rules. And House Bill 3359, due pass as amended to Ways and Means.
Covered all the bills, right?
Fabulous.
Okay, just want to make sure. I really want to thank this committee for long, hard hours. I want to thank our committee administrator, analyst, and our committee assistant. It's been some long, hard hours, really great discussions. I think we did a lot in the first chamber. And so on Thursday, we're going to have a slight break before we take on the Senate bills. We'll meet at 9, give you an hour off.
Good.
And what I've asked Cassie to do is bring back what the bills are that we passed, separated into human services, housing, and task forces, so we just know what we've done. And we'll try to do some attempt at figuring out how do we give our input to the subcommittee on the ones that we refer to Ways and Means and tax credits, because those are all expenditures. I'm not going to try to do a big thing on what you think about the Human Services Budget Committee right now, but I just in terms of what are our top priorities for, and so we're going to try to figure out a way to have everyone individually be able to give some feedback that we can compile and give it on to the subcommittee. So that's what we'll try to do in the 45 minutes or you know, that we'll have on Thursday, and then we'll start next week hearing Senate bills. And we'll have a much smaller group of those. So with that, we're adjourned.
Go ahead.
With that, we're adjourned.
Go ahead.
Have a much smaller group of those. So with that.